Today's daf in Masechet Yevamot, brought to you from Eretz HaKodesh, is daf Nuntet, and we're holding three lines up from the bottom on daf Nunchet Amud Beit. So the last thing that we had in the Mishnah was that in the event, even Aliba de Rabbi Meir, so we have some woman who is now in a relationship, which is going to culminate in a Bia Psula, so we call that Mishtameret L'Bia Psula, that she, so long as she's in that relationship, so she's not allowed to eat truma. But continues the Mishnah, im nit armelo nit garshu, suppose the husband that had given her the erusin and had not slept with her, so suppose he had died, or suppose he gave her a divorce, and at that moment, he's out of the picture, and now she can go back to eating the truma that she always ate from her father's household, because she was a bat kohen. In all of these dinim that we're talking about, this was not looking at the Mishnah first. He just had a general halacha. A Kohen Gadol is supposed to marry a betula. And it's also for him to marry, with an Isra say, it's also for him to marry a beula. Now the question is, what defines a betula and a beula? Now we're going to see that there's a shita that holds that even if she is a bogeret, that she's considered to be a non-betula. And we're going to see that there are a lot of variations in how precisely we understand the Torah's hakpada on a Kohen Gadol. Because the question is this, are we talking about a woman who has never had any kind of sexual relations? And that's what we want the Kohen Gadol to be having, so to speak, a fresh woman that has never been exposed to anything sexual. That's one way of understanding it. But the other issue is, remember that the Torah, and we've been talking about this issue when we were dealing with the question of a Pitzua Daka, who is a Kohen. So the question over here also is there something about the nature of complete genitals? So we understand that in the case of a male who is damaged on some level, genitally damaged, so the halacha is over there that the Torah says, look, he's not allowed to marry anybody, right? So I mean, that means that for all intents and purposes, the Torah really has a hakpada on the simple physical structure of genitals, correct? Now, certainly part of female genitals is bitulim. And the question is, I mean, so is this a genital issue in terms of the physical form of genitals? Or is this a sexual issue? Now, the nafkamina will be, supposing these bitulim, which are part of the genitals, suppose they were removed by accident. You know, this girl fell down, she was riding a boy's bike, falls down on top of that, which is why girls never ride boys' bike, falls down on top of the boy's bike and breaks her betulim. Okay, is that a problem for a Kohen Gadol? That's one issue, which we're going to see is discussed in the Mishnah. And the technical term for such a thing is mukat eitz, that there was damage done. This is the place where we could start talking about broomsticks. So if we're talking, that's why we use eitz. If we're talking about genitals, quadgenitals, so then broomsticks cause just as much damage as anything else. We're just talking about damage. If we're talking about sexual genitals, so to speak, it's a totally different issue. So over there, the idea of a non-betula would not include a non-sexual object, such as a broom. This is a machlokas, as we'll see, whether a mukat eitz is considered to be sufficient to passel a woman for a Kohen Gadol. Now, there's another, not necessarily direct corollary of this, but another related question. When we talk about a woman being a betula, remember that we use this in Rashi, in the Chumash explains that when we were talking about Rivka, so that she was also a betula, as Rashi points out, nobody ever had sex with her. I said, what does that mean? It means even shelo kedarka. So it means even anally, which has nothing to do with betulim, but that would mean that a woman who was no longer pristine, so to speak, no longer innocent in terms of sexual experience, would be considered to be a bu'ula, even though we're talking about a bi'ah shelo kedarka, which would not have any impact on the betulim. So now we have two extremes over here. On the one hand, if we're talking about genitals, so then anality has nothing to do with genitals, unless you're Freudian. And if we're talking about sexuality, then broomsticks have nothing to do with sexuality. So we have two different ways of viewing this whole thing over here. L'chora, if the issue of the betula is sexual, so then brooms don't make any difference. And then we would not be asering a mukat eitz. If we're talking about sexually, so then the idea of being a betula is something like a metaphor, right? It's like, okay, betula means a woman who never had sexual relations. So then in that case, I understand that even the halacha of Bi'ashalo Kedarka would also be inappropriate for the Kohen Gadol. Could both of these things be true? In other words, could there be an element of purity in terms of relationship, on the one hand, and also untouched genitals, on the other hand, which both of which would be important in terms of the madriga of the Kohen Gadol? Then the question is a crazy question. Could you put the two together? Could you penetrate anally with a broomstick and call that a mukas eitz? That's weird. I mean, that would be l'chora, you would think neither one or the other, and yet the Gemara actually entertains this. So we've got some real expansion of the basic issues that have to do with the concept of betula. But one of the curious ideas is that if, in fact, there is a combination of ideas, and a betula is both something that refers to sexual purity, but also refers to the complete wholeness of genitals. Now, the two are somehow integrated, because the fact is that the fresher, so to speak, a girl is, the more her betulim are actually real betulim, which is a curious kind of thing. So that the older that a woman gets, the more thin and less constrictive her betulim get. And it's because of that that we have a concept of the Kohen Gadol not only needing a girl who is technically a betula, but as we'll see, it's a machlokas whether he's even allowed to marry a girl who's over the age of 12 and a half. Why? That's not a girl anymore. That's a woman. Who wants a woman when you can have a girl? Amazing. Anti-Western ideas. It's like so incredible. So the Kohen Gadol can't even marry her. She's too old for him. She's 12 and a half already. What are you talking about? Okay. So therefore, we have a machlokas about that issue. A bogeret. Is the bogeret suitable for a Kohen Gadol? Now, assuming that a bogeret is not suitable. So let's imagine a case like this. The Kohen Gadol goes ahead. He gives Erison to this nice, mature 3-year-old. Well, that's really machlokas, whether he's supposed to marry a katana bedafker, whether she should already be 12. But anyway, so he goes ahead and he gives Erison to a 12-year-old, as opposed to a 12-and-a-half-year-old, as a bogeret. And she is, at that point, obviously a complete betula, because nothing has affected her genitals. Now, during the time that she's waiting to get married to the Kohen Gadol, she ended up, believe it or not, becoming 12 and a half. It turns out that entropy affects even 12-year-olds. Okay, so now she's got entropic betulim. What happens? Is that considered to be real betulim or not? Oh, my gosh. The gabbai this morning went in there and dragged the Rebbe out of bed. This is a disaster. Things are getting dangerous over there, Rebbe. Great. All right, good to see you. I see it takes two to get you out of bed. Had to bring along a help. Very good. Okay, Kain Yirbu, the getting out of bed, not necessarily people. All right, so now here's my question. When the Torah says Yikach, he's supposed to take a Isha who is a Betula. Does that mean to take at the point of erusin, or does that mean to take, meaning as a wife, which is already the point of nisuin? So then the question would be like this. He actually gave erusin to a full betula because she was a ketana. But then by the time he's taking her to the chuppah, now she's already a bogeret. So the question is the yikach a reference to erusin, or is the yikach a reference to nisuin? Now note that this is an extremely unusual mitzvah, right? Because obviously he doesn't have to remain married to a betula. That would create some difficulties, to say the least. So therefore, he only has to take the betula. So it's not that the Torah insists that a Kohen Gadol be married to a betula, so he only has one-time disposable women. That's absurd. So the point over here is that at the time that he marries her, she has to be a betula. What is that time? Is that time erusin? And then, okay, he did it. He married a betula. By the time he sleeps with her, she may not be a betula, but who cares? Or is it a reference to nisuin, that he has to, at the point of nisuin, then she has to be a betula? So this is my question. Boimine Reb Chiya bar Yosef Mishmuel. Kohen gadol shekidesh et haketana ubagra tachtav mahu. Where is Alon when you need him over here? Trevor, what's going on with your son-in-law? This may require a little wake-up call from mean father-in-law, because I want to find out the Korean and Japanese approaches to betula, which I'm assuming he would know. Now, we know there's tremendous, I'm not quite sure how the cultural stress on virginity works. In a country where people are willing to pay thousands of dollars to be able to sleep with a betula, what does that mean? Does that mean a genital betula entirely, or does it mean a sexual betula, or does it mean both? I'm not sure what the halacha is in Japan, if you're buying a geisha or something. So I'd like to find out, because I mean, over here the question of how the Torah is viewing a betula, it's very, I think, difficult for people who grow up in Western society to take these kind of things so seriously. But there are places where these things are very, very serious, and it would be a good place to find. So if anybody knows, please let me know. And if Trevor can get his son-in-law out of bed, or we could send the gabbai over there. He's not that far away, you know, and he's very practiced in dragging even Rebbe's out of bed. He could probably get Alon out of bed.
I'm sure he's singing
Hallel. Yeah, he's very busy. That's true. Chas v'shalom. I didn't really mean he's in bed. Chas v'shalom. Anyway, that's my question. So now Shmuel turns around. Yes, I want to know. Do we go according to the time of the nisuin, or do we go according to the time of erusin? Amalei Shmuel said, well, I can show the answer to that question right here from our Mishnah. Because it says in the Mishnah that here we're talking about, according to Rabbi Meir, Mishtameret Labi Apsula, means that she was not ever taken to the chuppah, right? She's only an arusa. And it says over here that if the Kohen is X'd out by dying before he ever sleeps with her, then she goes back to eating truma, right? So then what does that show? That shows that the moment of the definition of the psul of eating truma has to do with the kicha of nisuin and not the kicha of erusin. So that proves it. Look at our Mishnah. The Mishnah says, Nitarmelu and Etgarshu, Mina Nisuin Pisulot, Mina Erusin Kisherot. So isn't that a clear proof? Omarle, clear proof. What the heck does that have to do with my question? Reb Chiya bar Yosef says to Shmuel, I asked you from the question of how we define kicha for the Kohen Gadol, and you're trying to bring me a riot from the psul of eating truma? How the heck could somebody be puzzled eating truma if she never, ever was nivelet? Why is she psula from eating truma? Only because she would be called a chalala. Can you have a chalala just from a kinyan and not from an actual physical relationship? I never suggested such a thing. I think that's crazy. Of course you wouldn't be a chalala, and I never asked anything so stupid. I never asked what the din would be to make her a chalala and therefore psula from the truma. Over there, of course, bi'aghi de mashavya chalala. The Torah is always makpid on some type of sexual relationship, not on some type of technical marital relationship. That's not the point of making chalalut. Well, I mean, apparently Shmuel entertained that possibility, that the concept of being a chalala is someone who was married to someone who was a asurala, okay? But I tell you that, that's not what I wanted to know. I wanted to know about Isha Biftulea Yikach. What is the reference to the mitzvah, where obviously it has nothing to do with his continued marriage to a betula? What mitzvah is it referring to? Is it talking about the Kicha Kiddushin? Or is it talking about the Kicha of Nisuin? So that's my question. My, can you bring me a raya to that? Or Malay says, Shmuel, actually, I can. Because Hanami Tenitua, this too is a raya that I can bring you, as we'll see later on. Here's an interesting question. A Kohen is a regular Kohen. He had no idea that his name was in running for the Oscars, in which he was going to become the Kohen Gadol. Okay, so he goes ahead, and he is Ires et ha'almana. So he went ahead to take an almana in marriage, which is fine, because if he's not a Kohen Gadol, he's allowed to marry an almana. A regular Kohen only has a problem with marrying a grusha. So he goes ahead, and he's Ma'ares the almana. Well, we got a lot of Sesame Street over there going. I'm telling you, the more they get together, and there's clearly, it's like termites. There is some type of tipping point in which the Daf Yomi suddenly turns into Sesame Street. Okay, at least it's three. It used to be even when we got two people together, we had Sesame Street. All right, so now, are you guys here or not? Okay, Baruch Hashem. So now, I'm bringing you a raya like this. The Kohen goes ahead. He gave Eris into an almana, and then they appointed him to be the Kohen Gadol. What happens now? Is he allowed to go ahead and keep this almana and take her to the chuppah? Or does yikach mean at the time of the chuppah? That's the question. So it says over there, Beferish, that if he already had taken her as an almana, and then he becomes the Kohen Gadol, he is allowed to do the knisa. So that means when it says lo yikach, he's not allowed to take an almana. What it means is lo yikach for Erison. But since at the time that he did that, there wasn't a problem, so therefore there's no problem of nisuin. And that should be exactly the same thing as over here, that when it says he's supposed to ki im isha b'vtuleo yikach isha, that is essentially p'tula me'amav yikach isha. It means yikach in the same way that it would be at the time of the erison. No, not necessarily. Shine atam. Shmuel's having a hard time proving his point today. That is a special case. What is the special case? Because over there we have an additional pasuk that comes along to tell me, ki im betulami amav yikach isha. Now, I don't need to say the word isha, do I? All I need to say is ki im isha bivetula. Why does it say kikach isha? What else are we talking about? We said an isha bivetula. Therefore, it's a riboy, and it's coming to tell me if he's going to get married, he is allowed one step of marriage that you would think he's not allowed. Namely, he's allowed to be kones. As long as he didn't do the eris, but that's a special halacha when it comes to a Kohen Gadol who is taking an almana. Moshe Shmuel, what the heck? It's the same pasuk, for heaven's sakes. I don't understand. How is it only one part that you're looking at? If you're telling me that yikach isha, in the context of a Kohen Gadol who's not allowed to take an almana, he's only allowed to take a isha betuleha, so it's the same pasuk. What are you arguing with me about? So, Hachanami, says Shmuel, it says isha. Oh, no, no, no. You can't use the same pasuk twice. Achat velo shtayim, says Reb Chiya bar Yosef to Shmuel. You can only have one riboy from that isha. How are you learning that riboy twice? Therefore, I say, the fact that he's allowed to be machnis with nisuin after he already took an almana, that's a special dispensation that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave to the Kohen Gadol from this extra pasuk. But you can't use that to tell me that he's got a dispensation when it comes to the betula. Maybe the betula ikach means that at the time that he's taking her as a knusa, she has to still be a betula. And over here, if she grew up and she's already 12 and a half, how can you call an old lady a girl that is ru'uya for a Kohen Gadol, for heaven's sakes? And because of that, I don't see that it's a raya. It's achat velo shtayim. You can only bring one use of this pasuk. This is a one-time dispensation. What's it say on the ticket? One free almana or one free old lady of a whole 12 and a half years old? Okay, that's the question. Well, I mean, so how do you know which one is which? Umara ita. So why'd you pick on the almana that it's the heter? Why isn't it the heter to be machnis his betula? Well, because it's a big difference, isn't there? I mean, in the case of the betula has now become physically changed. She's now an old lady, for heaven's sake. So before, 6 months ago, she was a youngster. And there we can actually measure physically the change in her body. So she had the genitals of a child. Okay, that's suitable for a Kohen Gadol, but to take the genitals of an old, worn-out woman of 12 and a half, that's not suitable for a Kohen Gadol. And since that's a physical change, so because of that, I understand that it's less likely that the Torah was going to let up on him than in the case where he's the one who happened to have gotten appointed as the Kohen Gadol. I mean, that's the only change. There were no other physical changes. So there it's more likely the Torah said, okay, if you became a Kohen Gadol later on, go ahead and continue to marry the Almana that you were in love with from before you were appointed the Kohen Gadol. Possibly. Now, there's an interesting Magen Mishnah. The Rambam says that a Kohen Gadol is only allowed to marry one wife. So the Magen Mishnah says, where the heck does the Rambam get that from? Must be that he reads this Gemara, Achas Velo Shnayim, that it's a different diuk. Isha means he can only have one wife and not two wives. That's what he's using the drasha of Isha for, and therefore you can't use it to be Marbe the Betula. That's what the Rabbi Magid suggests. It's very interesting. Lemaisa most understand that the Rambam is not saying that he's not allowed to have two wives. He's basing what he's saying on the Gemara in Yuma. Remember that a Kohen Gadol is, remember, he has to have an extra wife just in case his wife dies, right? So the Gemara asks, but how's he going to be able to do the Aveda? Because when it says that he's Bechaper al Beito, it's only on one bayit, so he can't be married to two women. So that's, over there is a completely different issue. Over there, it's the Rambam might be saying that since the Kohen Gadol has to do the Aveda of Yom Kippurim, so what's he going to do? He's going to come to Yom Kippur and he's going to divorce his wife. So therefore, Kohen Gadol shouldn't marry more than one woman. But that would only be, you know, a good advice, so to speak. But it wouldn't be from this Gemara. But it's an interesting aside, no? Anyway, we're ready for Sir Richard.
And the drink.
Thank you. Kohen Gadol lo yisa almana. A Kohen Gadol cannot take an almana to the nisuin, bein almana min erusin, bein almana min nisuin, whether her first husband had been married to her fully or whether he was only, as we use the word, engaged, meaning but there was a kinyan of kedushin. Makes no difference. If he dies, then that woman can no longer marry a Kohen Gadol. Furthermore, a Kohen Gadol cannot marry an old woman of 12 and a half. Velo yisarat habogeret. Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon say, no, he certainly can be marrying a bogeret. Velo yisat mukat eitz. Now, the question is, this is the old broomstick story. is the Mukat Eitz that it's referring to over here part of what Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon is saying? Is this a statement that everybody holds of? And that means that what we're talking about over here is that we have a genital issue and not a sexual issue. So that what we're worried about is the actual survival of her intact genitals. Tana Rabbana, when we use Mukat Eitz, of course, it doesn't necessarily mean a broomstick. Mukat Eitz means any type of accidental event that affected the betule, or illness even, whatever it would be. Tana Rabbana, it says in the Torah, Almana lo yikach. He's not allowed to marry Almana, Grusha, V'chalala, Zona, et Eila lo yikach. Ki'im betulam yamav, yikach isha. So when it says almana yelo yikach, it's any almana, no matter how she was married originally. Says, well, obviously. I mean, where would you get the idea that a widow would only be a widow from Nisuin? A widow isn't something sexual, is it? So it's just the fact of marriage, right? Pshita. No, not necessarily, because we do have a use in the Torah of almana, specifically from the Su'in, because in the Torah, Tamar was told, Shvi almana beit avich, ad yigdal shela bani. That was what Yehuda said to Tamar. So then, if that becomes a model case, then it means that the model for Yevama is Tamar, and Tamar was a Nisu'ah for many years. So therefore, we see that the use of an almana, I would have thought, maybe. So malahala min anasuin, afkan min anasuin. Therefore, it comes along the Mishnah to say, don't worry yourself about that. Well, wait a minute. I mean, now that you raise the question, how do we know that that's not true? Ve'ema achinami. No, because the pasuk lists all of them together, right? Almana ugrusha. Now, there's no such thing as a specific reference to grusha from one state of marriage or the other. And therefore, the same way that a grusha is bein min almana, bein min arusin, bein min anasuin, Afkan, bein mina erusin, bein mina nesuin. Fine. Lo yisata bogeret. Where do we get the idea that he cannot marry a girl who is 12 and a half years old? So here is the two approaches, the differences between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, again, in how to understand the pasuk, which says, Vehu isha bivetuleha yikach. Note the strange Lashon of bivetu leha. What does bivetu leha mean? I mean, it's sort of weird. Shouldn't it just say vehu isha betula yikach? A woman in the state of her betulim? I mean, what exactly does that mean, bivetu leha? That turns out to be the key to understanding the machlokas. So turn around. Vehu isha bivetu leha yikach. This means not to a bogeret. We're over there. Kalu la bivetu leha. Divrei Rabbi Meir. Over there, she no longer has the full use of her betulim once she's 12 and a half years old. There's too much stretching of tissues. There's too much enlargement of the vagina. And therefore, her betulim are not as useful. Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, they say, no, there's no problem of a bogeret. So the Micah Miflagay, what exactly are we discussing over here? Ah, so Rabbi Meir says the word betula, if it would not have said bitulea, it would have just said, v'hu isha bitula yikach. So then, that would have meant, okay, is she identifiable as a bitula? Yes. So then that's fine. I don't care. She can be 80 years old, as far as I'm concerned, as long as you can still find some of the original tissues of a hymen that is considered a bitula. It's a genital question. So what's the problem? But then, when you go ahead and you say, no, no, that's not enough, the Torah says. The Torah insists on saying, bituleha. So bitulim would have been mashma from the word bitula, even mixat bitulim. When you say bituleha, what are you trying to say? With all of what she once had, the good Lord granted her beautiful, thick, and protective bitulim. Does she still have them? Those were hers. No, she doesn't have them anymore. Oh, so then that means she's no longer in her full state as a bitula. That's what it adds when it says bivetula. And that would mean, ad de'ika kol abitulim. Now, when the Torah then goes and puts in a bait, which is really weird. Some of us were wondering, how does a woman get into Betulim unless Betulim is a state of some kind? Why would we be using bait? So Bivetulea is exactly what it means, says Rabbi Meir. It means a place, not a state. So Bivetulea is coming to tell me all we are concerned about is the real presence of genital betulim. And that's why it stresses over here in the place where there are such betulim. So why do I need to know in the place where there are such betulim? Because if, in fact, maybe she's had plenty of sex, but it's all anal sex. Yeah, but that's irrelevant because it's not bivetulea. That's the beauty of the drasha. So therefore, according to Rabbi Meir, we're bringing out so powerfully that the whole point in the pasuk is to stress that what we want here is not something sexual, something genital. What defines the physical woman that we're talking about? And therefore, anything that is going to reduce that physical reality is going to create a problem. But if it doesn't, even though you'd say, well, look, you know, this woman is like, she's been working in the porn industry for years. I mean, how could she be roy for a kohen gadol? That's fine, because what we're looking at is the physical bitula. Okay, that's Rabbi Meir Shita. Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Shimon say just the opposite. The concept of the word bitula, we said, if we would just say he should take an isha bitula, that would have meant something which is pristine. That's the meaning of the word bitula. So then that means, according to Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Shimon, the very idea of a betula is the pristinity of the betula. And that would mean, according to us, a betula shlema. When you insert the word betuleha, you're telling me whatever she's got is good enough. Okay, so then you're saying exactly the opposite. You're saying, I do not insist on pristine betulat. And therefore, betuleha would mean the exact opposite of Rabbi Meir. As long as what she's got is good enough. So miksat betulim would also be fine. So then when it says bivetulea, what would the meaning of bivetulea mean? As long as we have, as we said, her actual achiyu kol betulea kayamim. So now what we're saying is, what we want to look for, according to Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, the word betula would have meant pristine. That would have been ossering the begeret. Now that it says betuleha, we don't care if it's pristine. And therefore, even if she is a begeret, as long as she's got something. Now, bivetuleha, the extra base, is coming to tell us that she did not lose anything of her pristinity. That's the point, which would mean the exact opposite of Rabbi Meir, even sexually. So if, in fact, there was a anal intercourse, then that would ruin her betulim, because it ruins her pristinity. So the additional bivetuleha means, if you can preserve her pristinity through having betulot, I don't care whether physically you've got all her betulot or not. So it's a completely opposite reading of the pasuk. If we begin with using the word virginity as a reference to a physical state, then it means what Rabbi Meir is saying. If we use the word virginity to refer to Virgin Airlines, although I can't be sure over there what they mean, but so then you're talking about a actually pristinity state. Now, this depends on how you begin. And then the Torah will be changing the meaning according to the context. So it's perfect. Excellent. So each one follows through with a consistent reading of the word. So, achu kol betulei kayamim, her entire pristinity must be untouched, bein kedarka, bein shelo kedarka. Omri v'yuda amarav. Rav Paskin over here, nivala shelo kedarka pisulak lekuna. That if, in fact, she was nivelet shelo kedarka, so then she is not allowed to marry a kohen gadol. Doesn't mean lekuna, obviously. We mean to a kohen gadol who has to worry about a betula. I mean, we don't care about a coin head yod over there. That's nothing to do with Nivala Kedarka, Shaloka Darka. You'll say, but wait a minute, isn't she a Zona? No, she's not a Zona, because a Zona is not a reference, at least according to the normative Shita here. A Zona is not a reference to a woman who engages in all types of sexual misbehavior. It's only if she is Nivela to someone who is usher for her, not to someone who is mutter, but is just in a casual relationship with her. This is all important for us to define La Halacha, as we will be over the course of the next daf. Fine. So therefore, what we're saying over here is that according to Rav, even Shelo Kedarka for a Kohen Gadol is not considered to be a betula. Mativ Rava velo tiyel isha b'isha haru uyalo. Now let's talk about an interesting case like this. The halacha is that if someone rapes or seduces a child, so then the halacha is that he is supposed to marry her, right? Now, if he marries her, then he doesn't have to pay the normal knas of 50 shekel if it was a seduction. If he raped her, he has to pay 50 shekel no matter what, even if he ends up marrying her. And the marriage is there because of that idea of the protection and coming through in deeper ways. It's because of the act of baalut. You actually, it makes you a baalut, and therefore if the woman wants you, you're stuck because you have turned yourself into her husband, whether you want to or not. Okay, so now the question is like this. In a case where we have a mitzvah that you're supposed to be marrying this woman because you raped her, but you are a Kohen Gadol, and she was an almana, which we're going to ask how she could be almana, but prat la almana la Kohen Gadol, where charusha v'chalutza la Kohen Hediot, where it would be usher for the Kohen to marry her, so then the Torah did not say you have to marry her if you raped her. Okay, so now let's take a look at how does that this case actually happen. So, heichidani, how in the world did this guy do the rape? What did he do? If he actually slept with her normally, so then why does it say if she was an almana, then he doesn't have to marry her? She is no longer a betula because he raped her. And even if he's a Kohen Gadol that is not talking about an almana, he's mechuyev to take a betula. And now if we're going to say, you've got to take this woman that you raped, then we're going to tell him, now you're going to have to marry a non-pristine woman. You wrecked her. What do you mean? Hey, I was the one who wrecked her. So now why is it that I'm not supposed to marry her? Because we're going to see later on that even his own be'ula is asura to him, and therefore he's not allowed to marry her. So it can't be that he's stomped in a normal rape, ela lav shelo kedarka. So it's talking about over here that he must have raped her anally. And therefore, his problem is that he cannot marry her because she is a, what? An almana. But isn't she also a bu'ula? No. So you see from over here that vis-a-vis the Kohen Gadol, the fact that she was bu'ula, shelo kedarka, does not make her a bu'ula. That seems to be what it proves. So you see from here, it's only an Isra of almana, but it's not an Isra bu'ula, mishum bu'ula lo. So how can you say that it would be usur, and she's considered to be a non-betula because of Bia Shalor Kedarka? Well, it could be going like Rebbe Meir. Maybe Rav doesn't hold of Rebbe Meir. It's true that Rebbe Meir says that you cannot have he says bibetuleha means a be'ula shelo kedarka is mutter. Remember, that's how we had the extra bays. So therefore, if Rav doesn't hold like that, so then everything is fine. Because according to Rebbe Elazar, Rebbe Shimon, the halacha is that, in fact, anally would take away the pristinity of her bituleha. Fine. So Rav was going like Rebbe Elazar. Wait a minute. Then why would Rav, if Rav is going Rebbe Elazar, why would Rav say that the problem over here is that she's a bu'ula? Why doesn't Rav say that the problem is that she is a zona? How is she a zona? Because Rebbe Elazar's shita is that if you have even casual sex, and there's no iser on either of you from sleeping with each other, nonetheless, the halacha is that she has a din of a zonah. Unbelievably, right? So if Rav holds Rebbe Elazar, then stam der. Why are we talking about the question of whether she's an almana? She would be usher even to a kohen adyot. There's nothing to do with her being a almana to a kohen gadol. And therefore she should be usher as a zonah. The Amr Rebbe Elazar, panuya bala, panuya shalola, shemishut, even casual sex creates a zonah. Ooh, that's a problem. Amar Rav Yosef, I have an answer. Instead of saying that he holds like Rebbe Elazar, so then why don't we say that what we're talking about in Rav is that she had sex with an animal. That's what it's talking about. And there we have an interesting situation where the intercourse of an animal is viewed as bia, and therefore she's no longer a virgin, but it does not create znus. And this we learned from a pasuk. The concept of znus is not sexual misbehavior. The concept of znus is moving away into an alternative relationship. And a behema is not a relationship. It's not an alternative relationship. It's just sexual misbehavior. And therefore, I mean, I know she says all the time, my husband is a real animal, but I mean, you know, she didn't have to prove it. So the point over here is basically there is no znus. We learned this out of a pasuk. There's no concept of znus in a behema, but there is be'ila. So hata mishum bu'ula ika. So the Kohen Gadol no longer can use her as the betula. But on the other hand, if she was not a zonah, I can only discuss the issue of either almana or znus. Amalei Abaye, does that make sense? I mean, isn't znus a function of sexuality? If we're going to define sleeping with an animal as copulation, so then isn't it also znus by definition? Memanav shach, ibe ula havya, zona nami havya. And if you're telling me she's not a zonah, then she's not a bula. We should view an animal as being meaningless. And don't try to tell me that an animal is really not sexual. An animal is a broomstick. Maybe that's what you'll tell me. Yeah. Well, maybe even a broomstick up her rear end is also considered to be a broomstick. So here's what I told you. The Gemara is going to even entertain the notion that once we've added in non-sexual issues for a Kohen Gadol, so then even if we view an animal not as being sexual and therefore not creating znus, but nonetheless he's at least a broomstick, right? So then if that's the case, there should be a concept of anal broomsticks. Anal broomsticks? Yes, because pristinity in terms of penetration may be the issue. Pristinity. Therefore, nothing to do with sex, but to do with the pristine. Okay, so the animal indeed leaves her non-pristine. That is insane, says the Gemara. There cannot be a concept of non-pristinity anally. For God's sake, people wipe themselves in a toilet, for heaven's sakes. And they even utilize, in those days, when they didn't have the disadvantage of toilet paper, they used good things like rocks, stones, wood, and so on, which, of course, you can use a bidet and get around that problem, too. But they actually ended up penetrating themselves. Does this make sense? There's no woman in the world who can marry Kohen Gadol who hasn't already become a mukas eitz anally because she used a pebble for cleaning herself after defecation. I mean, that's crazy. Of course, that's not considered to be a violation of pristinity. So forget about that. That can't be the question. So therefore, says Abaya, I don't understand. Either this animal does have a concept of znut, and therefore it has a concept of sexual bia, or it does not, so then it doesn't have a concept. But how can it be one way or the other? Says the Gemara, I can get around all of this, right? I can say, and we're going to get back to the issue of the animal and znut in a minute. But there's an easy way out. We don't have to have this. I can give you an example where she can be a non-betula, but she's not a zonah. How is that? I can give you an example of a woman who's been sleeping together with somebody for years without marriage, and she's not a zonah, even according to rabbinical laws. How is that? An ingenious case. Absolutely ingenious case. What we're talking about is a poor little orphan girl. So now, Annie, she's married to this guy because her father had died. And so now, as part of protecting children, we give them special sexual protection by giving them a husband. On the other hand, how do we protect them against being abused by these husbands? Simple. We say to them, you are only his wife as long as you feel like it. The moment you're upset with him, walk out the front door and say, I don't like this guy. And then the court will protect you and you will not be related to him in any way. That is called, remember, miyun. And what miyun does is it completely, it takes the original marriage and it annuls it from the beginning. So now here she's been relating to this guy all these years, right? She did miyun. She's not considered to be a zonah because all of her relationships were at the time they were completely b'drabonon marital relationships. But now it turns out that she's not a zonah, but on the other hand, she is, in this case, not a betulah. She's not considered to be an almanah. If the guy subsequently dies or whatever, she's not a grusha. Doesn't matter. So therefore, in this case, Rav is saying she is a afalpike, a surah to a kohen gadol, because she's not a betulah. Maybe that's the point. Okay. Omrav Shimi Bar Chiya. I just want to go back and point out to you that if, in fact, she did have sex with an animal, she is kosher to a kohen, even to a kohen gadol, as we're going to see. So then that means that lemaisa, if this was a vaginal bia, then she would only be a mukat eitz. She would not be a bu'ula. She would be a mukat eitz. And therefore, if you see that someone who is matir, a mukat eitz, to a kohen gadol, so then he would be matir, even a case like this. And Tanya Nami Hachi, it says this in the Braita. Nivala lemisha eino ish. A woman had sex with someone who is not a human. So alfa pish biskila, it could be that the Torah said that she's b'chuyev to die, but she's still kosher for the kahuna in the event, let's say, she was raped or something, so she's kosher for kahuna. Because who is to say that the physical act of copulation is considered to be sex in terms of being a bu'ula or a zona or anything? And therefore, there was no sex. Ki atar of Dimi Omar, there was actually a maisa like this. There was this young girl in the town of Hitlu, and there she was bending down to clean the floor, and some dog, wild dog, came in and raped her anally. So she had her skirt up because she was bending down, picking up the garbage from the floor. And without having any knowledge of what happened, this dog jumped her and ended up now doing what? Making her a bu'ula, making her a mukas eitz. What's the din? Rebbe said she can go ahead and get married, and Shmuel pointed out that means Rebbe was mater her, even for a kohen gadol. And that means get the idea of sex with an animal out of your mind. This is not a din in a sexual copulation. It's a completely different halacha that the Torah added over here. And therefore, it would have nothing to do with the arise, except for the fact that the Torah sticks it in and is mechadish this. And the same thing would be true, by the way, of homosexual relationships, except that the Torah went out of its way to say mishkavei isha, to tell me just the opposite, that such relationships are sexual. In fact, we can learn out how to relate to women, dafka, that anally is considered to be sexually, okay? But by an animal, we don't have that. So everything is clearly and carefully defined in the pasuk. Well, what do you mean to a kohen gadol, Rebbe? Rebbe lived way after the Churban Beis HaMikdash. I mean, well, how is he matir someone to a kohen gadol when there wasn't even a Beis HaMikdash for have a kohen gadol? Be may Rebbe kohen gadol, me have it. Obviously, he wasn't matir to a real Kohen Gadol. He's just saying, this woman is muteres, completely muteres, even to a Kohen Gadol. Halavai, tomorrow we would have the Kohen Gadol. We'd have to decide. But he wasn't saying it about any particular person. How do we know? The Bai was so upset about this, but the fact is it's Xeris HaKosov. How do we know? There's no such concept of znut when it comes to an animal. That's because it says beferish in the Torah. Lo tavi etnan zonao mechir kelev beit Hashem lo kecha. Tovat Hashem gam shneihem. Now, so what that means is that if you paid a whore with a sheep, let's say, and now this sheep she wants to bring as a korban, it's not a kosher korban. Why? Because it's payment for a whore, which is called etnan. But you also, if you bought a dog in exchange for a sheep, then that sheep cannot be brought either as a korban, because that's called mechir kelev. Now, here's where I learn out the fascinating halacha, that how about the opposite? How about an etnan for a kelev or a mechir of a zonah? Those are mutter, because the Torah says gam shnehem, only the two of them, not four of them. So don't use one for the other. So in other words, if you hire a whore for sex with your dog, is that called an etnan zonah? That's an etnan for a kelev? No, there's no problem in paying her with a sheep. That sheep does not become usher. Why? Because it's not called zonah. That's the point. So copulation with a dog is not considered to be znus. And the same thing would be true if I want to buy a whore. So I buy a whore, so I take a shifcha or whatever, that is not considered to be the equivalent of a mechir kelev. It's only payment for sex, which is called esnan, and not the actual price. So that means shnayim velo arba. So we see from there, there is no znus for the beima. Tana rabbanan. A Kohen Gadol, where he created the state of her not being a bitula. He seduced her. He raped her. He can't marry her. But if he does marry her, if he already married her, then nasrui. The marriage is a valid marriage. Anusat chaveiro, mefutat chaveiro. If he takes a woman that he wasn't the one that took out her betulim, another guy had seduced her, another guy had raped her. Over there, of course, he's usher. What if he went ahead and he took her? What's the status of a child? Rebbe Elazar ben Yaakov Amir, the child is a halal, because this was an usher marriage to the kuhuna, and it produces halalim. Whereas chachamim omrim, no. The halal actually does not apply to this vlad. The vlad is completely kosher. But let me get back to the first statement. If he married his own non-betula, he's married. Amar Rav Huna, Amar Rav, yeah, but he's got to give her a divorce. He's married because it's only an iser asay, right? So who is shabetula yikach? Of course he's married, but he's still going to have to divorce her. Motzi beget. So then why does it say im nasa nasui? I don't understand. But if he married her, he's married. I mean, doesn't that mean he could stay married? I mean, obviously he's married in terms of the state of marriage, no? Omer, Rav Acha bar Yaakov, you know what it means to say? That if he married her, he married her? That in the event that he had originally seduced her as a child, so she was now a nara, who was a bit too long. And now the Torah says, he has to take her as a wife, but he's not allowed to take her as a wife because he was the one that made her a non-betula. If he went ahead and took her for a wife, he's married. He starts to give her get, but he was mekayim the mitzvah, and therefore he does not pay her the 50 shekel knas in the case of mefuta. And on nusa, you pay the knas in any event, but as a mefuta, there's no tashlum of knas. That's why he said, Im nasa nasa. If he married her, he married her. And he was Mekayim the Lotia Leisha. And therefore, everything would be fine. So I already am 1 minute over time, but I would love to just finish this little piece here. And give me 3 minutes over time. Okay. So Omer of Gevirmi Bekatil, I said over this whole discussion over here, what Rav was quoted as saying by Rav Huna, I said it over to Rav Ashi, and Rav Ashi said to him, for Rav and Rav Yochanan both said, I thought, that, and this is a complete contradiction to what you're telling me that Rav says over here, that a bogeret or a mukat eitz lo yisa, so a kohen gadol cannot marry either a bogeret or a mukat eitz, but if he did, then he is allowed to remain married. Now, over there, we're not talking about, I mean, it can't mean over there remain married in the event that he seduced her. We're not talking about over here seduction. We're talking about, can you, in fact, remain married? And it says over there, you can remain married. And the reason is obvious. The reason is because, look, it makes no sense to say that when this girl marries a Kohen Gadol when she was a Nara, so then what, when she grows up 6 months later, so now he's supposed to divorce her? Of course not. The point was at the moment of taking her. So once he takes her, there's no mitzvah to get rid of her anymore, even though she's not going to be a betulah at this sense. So Alma, so Faliot Bogeret, she's eventually anyway going to be a Bogeret. They will grow old together happily as an old married couple of Kohen Gadol. And I never thought I'd be married to a grandmother, says the Kohen Gadol. And there he is, married to a great-grandmother. So what can you do? That's life. But that means that, of course, once you're married, you're married. So Hachanami, in the case of the Kohen Gadol, that he had already ruined either by rape or seduction, so it must be that's the svara. Since anyway he's going to ruin her, so to speak, by marrying her, so then what would be the point of telling him he has to get divorced? What do you mean you ruined her? It's crazy. And if I had married her, I would also have ruined her. You wouldn't have told me to get divorced then, so why should I get divorced now? So why would Rav have said, as you claim, that you are necessarily going to have to divorce her? Kasha, that's a problem. Now, you can understand why the Rishonim say that it's not a devastating problem. It's a small problem. Why? Tell me the answer. Yourselves. Use the old noodle. So the answer, my friends, put on your thinking caps, the answer that is offered by the Rishonim is quite simple. To say that in the end, the state that was problematic is going to evolve naturally out of the marriage by the simple fact that they will continue to have relations with each other anyway, that's absolutely true. Does that necessarily mean that when the problem that was created through rape, that problem is going to be created afterwards? You're comparing a situation where a woman was attacked and embarrassed, basically debased by rape, and you're saying, well, what's the problem? Stay with her. I mean, anyway, you're going to be sleeping with her. What does that have to do with anything? I'm going to be anyway sleeping with her. You can't compare those two situations as being the same at all. So over there, where the relationship initially was a problematic relationship of anusa satsmo, that you're never going to say. It doesn't make sense to say, well, I'm going to be sleeping with her anyway. Excuse me, sir. Thank you very much. That's all about physical things. We're not talking only about physical things over here. Okay, so that's the way some of the Rishonim suggest that this is not a devastating problem. Alrighty, gentlemen. It has been a great pleasure, and we are amazing at how really primal the questions are as the Masechet goes on to the undercurrents of the issues that are involved in the levels of these relationships, whether it's in terms of pure sexuality, whether it's in terms of understanding the interrelationship of physicality and sexuality, and whether it's in terms of the incredible mitzvahs that are involved in the concepts of the neshama and the restoration of connections and going back to Gan Eden. It has been an amazing masechet that does not hide itself from dealing with the most grossest and most obviously primal of issues. And remember, as HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, Shechora ani v'navai. All the newspapers are making fun of this as being dark and disgusting. And to me, This is Taltalim Shechorot. I love the sugya, says HaKadosh Baruch Hu. At last, you guys get into your Freudian selves and know what the heck is going on, and that's what Torah is all about. So don't sit here making fun of the things that the newspapers love to make these silly little jokes about all the time, like a bunch of fools. Excellent. All right, everybody, then we see you after a happy Yom HaAtzmaut or a sad Yom HaAtzmaut, depending on which approach you take in the Navi and how sophisticated you are about your hopes for Eretz Yisrael and how unsophisticated you are and how much you're able to parse apart the incredible, unbelievable, mind-boggling, historically unequaled relationships to Nisim that have taken place b'yameinu, and how disturbed you are being unable to parse apart the most incredibly stupid violations of dumb human beings who are so incredibly rochok and blind to what is going on around them that they live as if everything is normal in the process of a time of Kates and Geula without even recognizing it, the Yad Hashem, and talking about a tikva, which was the tikva of Bereshis, Ein Bereshis Ela Tikva, to turn it into a childish drinking song about waving stupid flags and nonsense. If you're able to separate all of those things, then may you have a happy Yom HaAtzmaut. See you later, everybody. Go to...